From the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Pablo Aras Peña with a quick update with your state and local news. Search is no longer offering free COVID-19 testing for people who don't have symptoms of the virus in Juneau. The regional healthcare provider began offering weekend testing clinics in July thanks to a grant from Indian Health Services. Now that funding has run out. While free testing ended in Juneau and Sitka, Search will continue providing limited free testing in other Southeast communities until next month. Asymptomatic people can still request a test through Search, but will have to pay through insurance or $145 out of pocket. The City and Borough of Juneau's testing site only performs asymptomatic tests for people undergoing medical procedures, and testing at the Juneau International Airport is reserved for those returning from travel outside the community. Otherwise, people experiencing symptoms such as fever, cough, or difficulty breathing can call the city's COVID-19 screening hotline to schedule a free test. According to city data, most results are taking an average of 2 to 6 days to return. Several other clinics in Juneau offer asymptomatic testing paid for through insurance or out of pocket. In related news, Hoonah has its first confirmed cases of COVID-19. The city of Hoonah learned today that 3 people tested positive for the virus. City Administrator Dennis Gray says bars and restaurants are now required to limit capacity. Anyone arriving in Hoonah by plane or ferry must get tested beforehand or when they arrive. Hoonah City Schools had been open for in-person learning since the start of the school year, but classes went virtual this week after administrators learned that a student who traveled outside the community may have been exposed to the virus. And Juneau's electric utility has had an unusual run of outages and blips this month, affecting a lot of its customers. Many residents in one neighborhood discovered dead appliances and scorched surge protectors after an outage on Veterans Day. Some of the city's hospital equipment and water utility machinery were also damaged. The utility says its service is usually more reliable and chalks this rough patch up to bad luck. KTOO's Jeremy Shea reports.
In the Mountainside Estates neighborhood, resident Hayden Garrison lost a lot of appliances to the Veterans Day power outage.
When the lights come back on, I noticed something was wrong because all the lights weren't coming back on. I blew 9 breakers, 4 of the GFIs, and then found out my boiler was dead, my oven was dead, my dishwasher was dead, my propane fireplace fan motor was dead.
Although he does have power on his stoop for that blower you're hearing, for an inflatable holiday minion. Garrison says he was fortunate that he was able to get a lot of repairs done that day.
And we were able to get up and running that night before, you know, got too dark and too cold.
The damage from home to home appears sporadic. A lot of Garrison's neighbors reported similar damage, while others got away scot-free, without any special power protection. Up the street, Robert Troussel was working at his desk the morning of the outage.
Oh yeah, it was like a little explosion underneath the computer at our desks. And it turned out to be our surge protector on our computers. And it fried that, and then we lost 5 or 6 light bulbs, a couple light fixtures.
He says the surge protector was scorched black. He wants to give it
a proper burial because it really saved a lot of stuff.
AEL&P spokesperson Debbie Driscoll says surge protectors that cover an entire home are more common in places prone to lightning strikes, but not in Juneau. Driscoll says the Veterans Day outage was caused by an insulator failing, the bulby porcelain things on power poles. When it failed, a high-voltage transmission line fell onto another line, which caused the surge before the system cut off power.
There is inherent risk with electricity. Equipment damage as a result of Mother Nature normal operations equipment failure as an industry standard is typically not the utility's liability. It's typically the responsibility of the customer to protect their equipment.
That said, AEL&P is helping to collect and forward damage reports from customers to its insurance company. But Driscoll says the insurance company's role with AEL&P's customers isn't resolved yet. It's not clear if folks like Hayden Garrison can expect any reimbursement. A spokesperson says equipment at the city-owned Bartlett Regional Hospital was also damaged. That includes 14 adjustable beds, a new ventilation system to help make indoor air at the hospital safer, and a CAT scanner. The spokesperson says most of it has been repaired. Jennifer Mannix, the city's property insurance expert, says some water filtration and pumping equipment was also damaged near Salmon Creek and Mountainside Estates.
The term fried has come up a few times, so I think it's more about replacing them at this point.
The city's property insurance policy doesn't pick up any costs until after the first $100,000 in damages a year. The dollar value impact from this incident is still being assessed, but Mannix says they may hit that deductible.
You know, the more I'm learning, I think we'll probably get close to it or exceed it, yes.
Mannix says the city budgets for some losses, so the out-of-pocket costs won't require any special action from Juneau's elected officials. She says she's also been in touch with ALMP's insurance company, but like other customers, it's unclear if it can expect any reimbursement. Driscoll, with the electric utility, acknowledges the glut of incidents lately.
Our system is typically more reliable than it has seemed to be in the last week and a half or 2 weeks, and that it's just a, for lack of a better term, a perfect storm of things coming together.
She says there was the first heavy snow of the season, which typically brings down trees, causing issues. Then on top of that, there was an unusual ice storm and high wind event. Then the insulator failed. The latest blip the utility had affected the Mendenhall Valley on Monday morning. Driscoll says a squirrel touched something it shouldn't have, causing a momentary fault. The squirrel probably didn't make it, but the system worked as it should, kicking power back on within a fraction of a second after the fault cleared. In Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea.
Exploration is resuming for copper, gold, and other metals on Lower Prince of Wales Island, Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports.
The Niblack project ramped up in 2009. In the years to follow, the company Heatherdale Resources says it plowed tens of millions of dollars into exploration efforts. But investor money dried up, and by 2012, full-time exploration had ceased, where it completely stopped in 2016. Now, after a corporate reshuffling of debt and rising copper and gold prices, the company plans to bring back a two-dozen-strong crew by the end of the month, says CEO Rob McLeod.
So we'll be drilling both from surface, so it's a track-mounted diamond drill, which brings out cores of the rocks and can go down. We'll probably be drilling holes, generally no more than 1,000 feet. Most will be shallower than that. And then we'll be able to take the drill underground and be able to drill in multiple directions, 360 degrees, essentially.
The Vancouver, BC-based exploration company has a surface drilling application pending with the State Department of Natural Resources. Most of the project area is on private land near Moira Sound. Supplies are flown in or shipped by barge or landing craft. Niblack has been touted as a potential working mine that, if developed, could one day be a major regional employer about 30 miles southwest of Ketchikan. But there are environmental challenges to work through. There is potentially acidic runoff from a rock pile near its Lookout Mountain deposit. The company has permits from state regulators to discharge mine waste through a sprinkler system and an inactive water treatment plant. More on that in a minute. Both permits expired this summer, but were extended by state regulators while the company files for renewals. Niblack's project manager, Graham Neal, says its mine waste collects in a settling pond before the liquid runoff is discharged on land.
It's a passive treatment system designed to filter out any contaminants, and then that discharges from an effluent from one of the ponds into the land application disbursement system, which is essentially a sprinkler system into the forest environment.
All drainage from the mine portal has been and still is monitored, sampled, and reported to the State Department of Environmental Conservation, he added. Critics say that's not an effective way to keep heavy metals and acidic waste out of the environment. The mining company has a facility that could treat the discharge, but it's not using it. In filings back in 2015, it successively argued that the nearly $4.4 million it cost to run the plant over 5 years would be too expensive.
The state of Alaska is not requiring them to chemically treat the water because they say it will be a financial burden to the mining company.
That's Guy Archibald, staff scientist with Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, an environmental group based in Juneau.
Well, I think that the mines need to stand on their own. They're either financially feasible or they're not. Offloading their costs of treating pollution onto public that owns the public lands should not be allowed.
In a statement, DEC says all of its permits are designed to ensure that the project doesn't harm the water quality and other resources that Alaskans rely on for their economic and social well-being. The company says it plans to continue surface exploration well into next year. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
And this is KTOO News.